shaft and into empty space.
Fire blast!
Rand burst into action as he saw Christy and Silas disappear into the blackness of the hole. It was a bore sunk several hundred feet deep, with nothing to break a fall. Rand reached the edge of the hole. Peering over the edge, he could see that Christy was clinging by her fingertips, which were slipping painfully as there was little purchase, and she had Silas clinging to her heels, even though she was trying desperately to kick him loose.
I go, you go with me, lady!
Not if I can help it!
She loosened one of her feet from his grasp and pulled it up before thrusting down hard, the heel of her boot cracking hard against the side of the Baron's head, catching him above the ear and stunning him. Just enough for him to lose his grip and plunge into the depths.
Hold on!
Ryan reached down, gripped her forearms in his strong fingers, and pulled with all his might, dragging Christy upward as she scrabbled for a foothold to help him. It took a few seconds, but she was finally out of the borehole and lying on the derrick, gasping for breath. Both of them were silent for a few moments as they regained their composure.
What now, lover?
We'll take the wagon, round up the others, head out on the blacktop, and hope for the best. Get JB to find a direction and try to head back for the redoubt. Get the fuck out of here and somewhere else.
You mean we shouldn't try and explain this to the other barons?
Ryan shook his head.
No chance. Look at it.
Christy raised her head. There were several fires across the worksite, and she could hear the scattered sounds of battle coming to a close. The well was in ruins, and there was no Baron Silas Hunter to stand accountable to the other barons. Just a bunch of outsiders that no one would trust. Christy rose to her feet, leg muscles still trembling from the effort.
Yeah, you're right. No one will believe us.
Let's get the wag, round everyone up, and get the hell out of here.
Keep listening for a special preview after these announcements.
In the radiation-blasted heart of the Northwest, Ryan and his companions form a tenuous alliance with a society of women warriors in what may be the stunning culmination of their quest. After years of searching, they have found the gateway to the pre-dark cabal of the Illuminated Ones, and perhaps their one chance to reclaim the future from the jaws of madness. But to seize tomorrow, they must confront its deadly guardians, what is left of the constitutional government of the United States of America. Deathlands 59, Amazon Gate. Deathlands Salvation Road is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, Kate Torrey, and Thomas Penny. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal dialogue editing by Matt Webb and Dan Smith. Sound design by Dan Smith and Brian Patton. Script adapted for graphic audio by Mark Delgado. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games.
Cutting Audio. Don't forget to duck.
From Outlanders 21, Devil in the Moon.
Grant stood aside as Kane and Bridget were marched out of the arena and into their seats. They sat on the benches with the two men still standing behind them, iron spears poised to thrust into their brains. Mina and Sardonicus joined Chief of Staff LJ, sitting on either side of him. LJ fondled Mina's leg absently as people filed into the stadium, taking seats all around. The crowd watched Grant in silence. They didn't seem anxious to watch the impending combat, nor did they seem disturbed by the prospect. The attitude seemed to be one of performing a duty. Hogan gestured to one of them guarding Chief of Staff LJ. The man flung his sharpened iron bar, and Hogan caught it deftly. Putting his own weapon on the ground, he held the length of metal in front of him at arm's length, hands gripping either end. Gazing at Grant, he methodically began to exert pressure on the bar. His facial expression didn't change, even as the muscles in his arms, chest, and forearms bulged and bunched. With a faint creak, the bar slowly bent into a U-shape. He flung it at Grant's feet.
I can do the same to you.
He didn't even appear to be breathing hard. Grant eyed the bar dispassionately. He picked up the rod, looked at it with only mild interest, secured a tight grasp on each end, and then began to straighten it. It required every iota of strength in his upper body and all his concentration to keep the exertion from showing on his face. When he had bent the bar more or less straight again, he placed the sharpened end in the ground and leaned on the crooked end as if it were a cane. A few appreciative laughs came from the spectators.
What are the rules?
Hogan grunted as if Grant's question were extraordinarily naive. He stooped over, as if to pick up his iron bar, then dug his fingers into the sand and flung a handful into Grant's face.
There are no rules.
Grant spit and sputtered, his eyes stinging. Instinctively, he whipped up the iron rod and blocked a vicious swipe from the hooked end of Hogan's bar. Metal clanged loudly, and the impact sent painful shivers up and down Grant's arm. He backpedaled rapidly, trying to clear his vision with frantic wipes of his fingers. He caught a blurred glimpse of Hogan thrusting sword-like with his weapon toward his face. Grant parried as Hogan moved in with speed, amazing for a man of his bulk. He swung, thrust, and slashed, using both ends of his bar. The hook grazed the side of Grant's head and tore out a few gray-sprinkled kinks. Grant cursed and tried to go on the offensive, but his eyes leaked tears. All he could do was parry Hogan's blows as he backed toward the curving walls. Sparks danced and flew, and the steady clanging of iron against iron filled the amphitheater. Hogan broke off the attack and stepped away, spinning and whirling his metal rod as if it weighed no more than a hollow reed. Grant backed away, keeping his eyes on the man's feet. The whirling piece of metal hummed through the air in a blurry circle. He knew better than to stare at it, because the spinning motion induced a mild hypnotic effect. The spectators didn't cheer the display of skill. Anger grew within Grant. No matter the euphemism Chief of Staff LJ applied to the ordeal, it was still bread and circuses for the masses. He knew that in the wild old pre-unification days, a number of self-styled barons set up gladiatorial games, most of them using murky old traditions about the survival of the fittest for justification. Despite all their other flaws, and they were almost countless, the oligarchy of the Nine Barons had put a stop to that kind of organized barbarism.
Hogan, as a general rule, I win games like this. And as a general rule, the losers always die. You really don't want me to prove that to you.
If you can't wait for the next installment of your favorite series to hit the shelves, plug into Cutting Audio's website and download it for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com